I am going to say salamu alaikum. I refuse to let George get away from the class, so salamu alaikum. Okay, the situation in Iraq at the moment, obviously incredibly chaotic, incredibly violent, very turbulent. It's getting worse every single day. There are massacres being committed by our boys and American troops on a daily basis. The definition of a massacre is indiscriminate use of fire and force against civilians. This happened to a massive extent in Fallujah. The local figure for the dead in Fallujah is 1,500, not the 800 that's been bandied around. Not everybody was buried in those two soccer fields. A lot of people were buried in their back gardens. A lot of people didn't go to the hospital because it was occupied by American troops and had been, pretty much destroyed. Same situation happening in Najaf. Indiscriminate use of fire. Very Israeli occupation force tactics being displayed by American troops occupying homes. When this happens, a family is put into one room that can be up to 15 people at a time. And these, family members will have to ask soldiers if they can use the toilet, if they can leave the room, if they can go to the kitchen. And then these homes are used as military bases, and people can be brought in and interrogated or tortured. Sniper positions are taken up at windows. It's an incredible violation. So this is happening. There's a lot of violence. A lot of people are getting shot. A lot of people are getting killed. You hear a lot about what the attacks on civilian targets, like Iraqi army, Iraqi police stations. These are not really seen as civilian targets by a lot of people involved in resistance or people who support the resistance. These are seen as, valid targets because they're collaborating with the occupation. In terms of sort of structural adjustment, which the measures were in, over 70 occupation orders have been passed since the beginning of the occupation in May. These are de facto laws, and in some ways, apart from the massive crime of the illegal war on Iraq, a lot of the big crimes of the occupation have already been committed in terms of determining Iraqi people's futures, determining the possibilities for generations to come in Iraq by restructuring and privatizing the entire economy. This was the goal of Order No. 39, passed in September. This order is the goal of the war on occupation in writing. It allows for 100% foreign ownership of everything above ground level in Iraq. So basically, oil itself, resources stay Iraqi, but secondary processing, refining, transportation, marketing, everything that turns oil into a commodity can be privatized. Property can be owned for up to 40 years, so you get around the sort of stigma and, political incorrectness of foreigners owning land or property in Iraq forever, but 40 years is enough time for exploitation and profiteering. There's also Order No. 39 allows for 100% profit repatriation. This basically means a company can come in, make millions and billions of dollars, and take it all straight out. It doesn't have to put it into any kind of Iraqi bank or have it benefit the Iraqi economy at all. You've also got an Order No. 10 strategy, which basically says that international organisations and their subcontractors are exempt from tax. And an international organisation is defined as anything which is international in character and includes the World Bank and the UN, and I would assume the United States Agency for International Development, which is this kind of NGO wing of the Defence Department, which has been contracting various defence contractors, Halliburton, Bechtel, Stevedore Services of America. So basically, the employees, these companies, do not have to pay tax. This is, worse than the tax strategy of 2003, which is bad in itself. It slashed the highest rate of income tax, corporate tax, from 45% in Iraq to 15%. And this money could be going towards unemployment benefit, to restructuring the country, to bringing benefits to people who have been just crumbled into the ground from 13 years of genocidal sanctions. And they were genocidal. You hear now of businessmen, and I did meet a lot of business people in Basra, privatizing the economy. And they talked about the neglect that Iraqi industry had been left in, and the lack of a concept of safety that Iraqi workers have, when forced to up this corrupt safety, which was sold for all the safety equipment, or they just didn't have any. And of course, the effect was down to the intentional grinding of the Iraqi infrastructure into a kind of infrastructural ground zero, which, aside from having absolutely no effect on the fascist ruling regime, in fact, prepared and primed Iraq now for the free market takeover it's enduring at the moment. So, another very important order in terms of everyday people's lives is Order No. 30 on salaries and employment. Now, this basically sets the wages for all Iraqi civil sector and public sector workers, which is the vast majority of the workforce. And that's not a very big workforce, because there's 70% unemployment, and that figure is from the Ministry of Labour and Social Affairs. I got that figure in September. Our figures varied around 50%, but the mass unemployment. So, Ordinal 30 creates a 13-level wage table which sets the lowest minimum wage for Iraqi worker at 69,000 Iraqi female. Now, that's about $45. That's less than half the recommended wage of a sweatshop worker in a free trade zone in neighbouring Iran. And, not surprisingly, people go into this. So, 69,000 Iraqi female doesn't get you anywhere. Average rent is about 50,000 female now. Rent has gone up because a lot of refugees from Iraq have come back. People from the countryside that come back into the city looking for work. So, also fuel is incredibly expensive. A canister of cooking gas, which families need to survive, you know, cook your food with it, heat your water for washing with it. An average family, 10 people, go to about 2 of these cooking canisters per month. Last June, one of these canisters cost 500 Iraqi dinar. By August, the price had rocketed up to 12,000 Iraqi dinar. This sparked riots, along with the price hikes in fuel, due to a lot of fuel sabotage, due to occupation using Iraqi fuel to power its own tanks and batteries, and not a lot of fuel theft, you know, just to hang over from the regimes or backhanders that two clan members organised. So, you know, and food, you know, fruit, vegetables, meat, these have all gone up. So you can't live on 69,000 Iraqi dinar a month. But there's resistance to this, and it was a social form of resistance. I had the privilege of working and living with members of the Southern Oil Company Trade Union, which is one of the most militant trade unions in the country. It's also the most important trade union in the country, because the Southern Oil Company is the most important company in the country. It's the biggest oil company in Iraq, and it's the only one that's exporting at the moment. The northern oil fields in Kirkuk are just paralyzed. They happened from about 5 months ago. Over 2,000 private attacks have taken place there. They're just not exporting. The south is. And what workers there did, a number of really cool things. One of the first things they did was expel all KBR employees from their websites. KBR, Kettle Brown Group, is the company that built the cages in Guantanamo Bay. They're a subsidiary of Halliburton, Dick Cheney's former company, and you know, Halliburton was given a contract to conduct emergency repairs on the oil sector, which included exports. So they were already rolling it, you know, from the moment that American bombs stopped falling. And they got that contract straight out of, you know, Capitol Hill. It was a loaded contract. So, Iraqi workers are conscious of this fact, and they expelled all KBR employees, and they undertook reconstruction autonomously. They used spare parts from the market, the black market. They eventually did accept parts from KBR, but they did a lot of reconstruction on their own, which really undermines the very racist ideology of Western overbears, big capital, reconstruct Iraq. Of course, it's always working class people that do everything, that make everything, that makes the world go round, in effect. And this is no exception in Iraq. These workers have been keeping their workplaces going for 13 years. God knows how. Turned into inventive geniuses, by necessity. And the same happened in Hafta Electricity Power Station, Najibia Electricity Power Station. Hafta is actually a really important case, because workers did much autonomous reconstruction as they could, but have been prevented from doing it anymore because Mitsubishi, massive Japanese electrical giant, which built Hafta, they have refused to come into Iraq for 2 years, and they own the plans, they own maps, they own spare parts, they own everything related to the possible reconstruction of the power station. So Iraqi workers, very capable, very willing, very able to reconstruct their own workplaces, which they will be doing anyway, are being deprived of the means of reconstruction. Iraq could have been reconstructed a long time ago. People just need a bit of training and materials, and they can do it themselves. So anyway, the other thing the SOC trade union did was they created their own wage table in a challenge to Reagan's dictated wage table. And they decided that the minimum wage for Iraqi workers should be 155,000 Iraqi dinar, not 69,000 Iraqi dinar. And they worked this out according to fluctuating market prices, food prices, rent prices, the cost of living, basically. And they said, if this is not accepted, we will go on strike. We will shut down Iraq from north to south. And if you send any troops in, we'll go on arms strike, we'll take up arms, we'll fight, we'll join the resistance. And it's no empty threat, because the people involved in the SOC, they fought in 1991 in Intifada. They've been very active against the Baathists. SOC workers killed a lot of their Baathist managers, because of course the oil sector had the most heavy repression. Not only is it the most important industry, people saw what happened when there were oil strikes in Iran, the death blow to the Shah's regime that wielded, but also because, it's... They had a really hard time. So anyway, this sent panic throughout the occupation authority and the Minister of World Health meetings with Hassan Jumar, the head of the SOC, and eventually they won their struggle. I mean, they won 102,000 as a minimum wage workers in the oil sector, plus benefits, plus risk payments and location payments, which did scrap by order number 30. And which basically, if you work in the middle of the desert, sometimes you have to be there for 5 days, 2 weeks, won't see your family. You get paid extra for that, you know, it's different from working in an office. So this was a victory. And, you know, it's testament to the potential of Iraqi workers, Iraqi working class people to organize, you know, democratically, you know, overcome the social psychosis that the regime engendered a lot of people in terms of alienation, in terms of fear of one another. Now, the Arab Baath Socialist Party was absolutely nothing of the kind. It produced absolute terror and alienation throughout the entire population. Children were schooled from an early age to spy on their parents. You couldn't even trust your own kids. So anyway, the SOC struggle is an important case in point. It's also inspired a lot of other struggles elsewhere in Baskar. And workers struggle is hot there. And, you know, many beatings of Baathist bosses, but paying as such. In the case of Onkasa Port, workers beat up Abdel Razak, the head of the Iraqi Port Authority, in front of the Minister of Transport, just to, you know, get home, just how much they hated this man. He wasn't giving them any eat payments, he was paying crap wages, and 100,000 Iraqi dinars a month. The police on the gates of Onkasa were getting 390,000. So there is this kind of resistance taking place. Other forms of resistance is the union of the unemployed. In the 70% unemployment, lots of people trying to organize to combat that. The UUI is demanding $100 per month unemployment benefit, which is possible given Iraq has the second largest oil reserves in the world. And the UUI held a 45-day continuous sit-in protest outside the occupation's headquarters in Baghdad. And the occupation actually made this poster, which is now a massive billboard, because there have been constant demonstrations every day. I mean, now the situation is hot. It's moved pretty much from social distance to full-on armed resistance. But everyone from former soldiers, former prisoners, unemployed, women, pensioners, students, were marching up to the gates. And I'll just explain what this says. It's very, very ironic. Freedom equals responsibility. Now with freedom, you have the freedom, you have the right to protest. But with this right, comes the responsibility to protest peacefully. You will not face any repression for your protest. Your voice is heard for your participation. Any kind of acts of aggression against coalition soldiers, Iraqi police, or Iraqi civilians will be dealt with harshly. And the union of the unemployed is actually co-opted into this poster. That's them. And when they got this, they set fire to all the bundles that were all set fire to, because they had a really hard time with that. Sitting, like, over 50 people were arrested and humiliated and made to sit in the room for the barbed wire and Burhan Baba, which is a GI slang for Iraqi. And Ali Baba was a hero, but in terms of sort of racist American GI concepts that he's been speaking. So there's this as well. Another just important point before I wind up is that there hasn't really been any regime change in Iraq. Yes, there was a de-ratification order, the very first one. This has been publicly reneged upon by Bremer, who about 2 months ago did state that they'd be bringing back in former Baathists. And I mean, this is no news to anybody in Iraq, because a lot of them never left, apart from ones that were beaten out and killed by working class people. A lot of them still hold their positions of power. The Baathists are the ones that know how industry works. They are still bosses, they are still in the managerial class. These are people who are writing reports on workers and getting them killed, and still can do that, and they're protected by the occupation. In the oil company, workers get killed throughout all their managers. The ones that survived were brought back to work at the SOC. They were shifted from sort of different locations, but they were protected by the occupation and the Ministry of Oil. You know, the Baathists still own the means of production, they still own the means of cultural communication production, they're still working in ministries. The Prime Minister, he's a former Mukhabarat intelligence officer with close links to MI6. This is the Prime Minister now. People's trauma is being recompounded and recycled. And this is fueling the intifada, and there will be two intifadas, one against the occupation and one against the Baathists. It was thwarted in 1991, thwarted in 1999, and it will happen again. So, we can't really support the armed resistance, and maybe some people don't, but there is a lot of social resistance you can support. The Union of the Unemployed, the organisation of Women's Freedom in Iraq, it's the only organisation providing safe houses for women in the prostitution industry, women fleeing honour killings, which were legalised by Saddam Hussein and still happening up and down the country. Ilan Mohammed, the head of Al-Houthi, she's facing death threats because of her very uncompromising and challenging stance on the political Islam, and some political Islamic groups want to kill her, and they do need our support. And of course, there's also the Arab Federation of Trade Unions, the Saudi Company Trade Union, and the Workers' Council, Federation of Workers' Council Unions in Iraq. I know I've run out of time, but there's some literature on the table there that can tell us more about that, including Al-Houthi's monthly newsletter. And feel free to ask any questions, because I was involved in the Iraq Work Solidarity Group, which is going to be providing practical material support to Iraqi trade unions and bringing people over, like Hassan Juma, to head the Saudi Company Trade Union. So, talk about it.